Well, I've got a few things we can talk about, and you can see if you can find something in there. To be fair, it's all pretty good stuff, but there's a few bits of news. We'll look at Ethan Laird's new contract at United. We'll look at a potential transfer, to praise Ed Woodward. We'll see.
You might be on that one.
I might be pushing uphill with that.
Unless he's resigned to join this podcast.
We'll have a bit of look at, again, like we said, United's upturning form over recent weeks, and a little bit towards the Bruges game on Thursday as well. But let's start then with Ethan Laird. He signed a new contract today. 3 years. Bit of a short one, isn't it, that? What do you reckon?
I don't mind that, because I think if after 2 years he's done the business, I think next season he might be in and out of the team. The season after that, maybe he gets a bit more of a chance. Mm. I mean, I'm right in thinking, you know, he's right-footed in Ethan Laird. He's right back. So Aaron Wan-Bissaka is only 22, I think. So he's not going anywhere.
No.
He can still get games coming for the Europa or whatever competitions we're in next season. But 3 years, he's probably about right. And I think there's an opportunity for him as well, because Diogo Dalot's gone a little bit off the boil.
Mm.
Now, it's too soon to say Dalot's not going to make the grade or we've got to get rid of whatever. But there is an opportunity there, I think, for another fullback to get games. And what I've seen of Ethan Laird, I've liked what I've seen. So I think Brandon Williams sort of leapfrogged him a bit, didn't he? I know Brandon Williams can play on the left, but Brandon Williams is the sort of one everyone's talking about. But don't let that distract you from what Ethan Laird's capable of. Mm. He's a very, very good player. 3 year deal, makes sense. I'm glad he's sticking around, and I hope to see much more of him.
It's a bit strange, isn't it, how everyone always talked about Laird as being the next, you know, really top class fullback. He's been such a highly rated youngster for so long, and yet it was just Brandon Williams who was certainly below Laird in the pecking order. Just his versatility to go, you know what, I'll play left back, and now he's like one of the a first team player much more consistently than Laird is. It's strange, like you said. It's going to be hard for him to get past Wan-Bissaka, isn't it?
Well, do you know what it might do a bit of good for as well? Is I don't buy into this whole Luke Shaw renaissance, by the way. I'm not having it. I've seen some absolute guff being spoken about. He's done okay for some games. I still think he makes some mistakes, and I still think his positional sense isn't great. But he's been better. Yeah. And I wonder whether that's because A, he's getting rested at times when Brandon Williams, and B, he's got someone breathing down his neck. So he knows he hasn't just got Ashley Young or whatever.
He's got
real competition. And maybe Aaron Wan-Bissaka could benefit from a bit of that. A, being able to be rested, and B, having a bit of competition where you see, when you are rested, if Laird comes in and plays well, nothing is certain at Manchester United. You know, we've seen players, top players, you know, get dropped, absolute superstars be dropped in the past. I know, but when we were a lot better than what we are now. But even recently, we've seen good players getting dropped. So it's not set in stone that you are going to get picked. And I think maybe that'll help him.
Yeah, I think you always need competition. Even, like I said, if it's not like, you know, Berbatov competing with Tevez, they're there at the same time.
No, you're right. Berbatov or Rooney. It's good you mentioned that.
You know,
I use that analogy a lot because, you know, you look at the Champions League final in 2011, Berbatov didn't even make the bench.
Yeah, exactly.
I know to me, that figure got that one wrong.
It was a bit of a controversy. Yeah. It wasn't just like a taken for granted, but we had options there.
But now, you know, Daniel James, who everyone has been saying needs resting, plays almost every week because we haven't got any options.
Yeah.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka plays almost every week because we're lacking options.
Mm.
You know, Fred plays practically every game because, again, we haven't got options. But we're moving forward in that direction a little bit with the signings, with the young players coming through, players returning from injury. There is a little bit of light at the end of this tunnel.
Yeah, speaking of signings, Woodward's come out and spoken today and he's been talking about Bruno Fernandes and his sort of role and his impact at the club so far. And it's obviously been a big impact. Like the way Solskjaer's talking about him, already comparing him to Scholes and Varane, which, you know, is a good, obviously it increases this hype over him, which he seems to be the sort of player that thrives on that. Some players you think, hang on a sec, don't push him too far. But I think he loves the fact that we like him already. And Bruno, you know, he seems to have this sort of real confidence and leadership that I think will thrive, like I said, on being compared to those sorts of players. But do you think this kind of recent upswing in sort of mentality and positivity around the club has been a kind of realisation of, hang on a sec, you know, Solskjaer, you can say what you want about his tactics, because you never truly know a manager's tactics because you just don't see what they do in training and, you know, you can see the way they play. But Fernandes has been excellent so far, obviously 4 games, but, you know, Maguire's been good, Wan-Bissaka's been excellent, Dan James has exceeded expectation. Do you think there's a slow kind of, like, tide turning towards, actually, Ole, one thing we can give him credit for without any doubt is his recruitment so far?
Yeah, because at first, everyone was sort of raving about his recruitment, weren't they? Because Daniel James, like you said, exceeded everyone's expectation, especially those first few games. Aaron Wan-Bissaka looked the absolute business. And Harry Maguire did pretty much what it said on the tin. So you were like, you know what? These are good signings. Ollie does deserve credit. The three players he's brought in have been excellent. Then it tailed off a little bit. There were question marks about Maguire. Dan James's form went out the window. Even Aaron Wan-Bissaka, people were questioning, you know, he's still not getting it going forward. So has Ollie got this right? But I think so far, you look at it and you take stock, you think, yeah, his signings have been good. Yeah. I think obviously it's too soon to tell how good Fernandes is going to be. Yeah. But from what we've seen so far, I'm more than happy. And Ighalo, I mean, it's almost like a bit of a win-win, isn't it?
It's a free hit, isn't it?
It's a free hit, so yeah. Because it's like Dan James. Dan James doesn't work out. You spent pennies on him in relative terms. If Ighalo doesn't work out, you spend, you know, 100 grand a week, whatever it is we're paying him. So it's not the end of the world. So I think Ollie does deserve credit.
Yeah.
I've always said with all his transfers, my criticism of him wasn't the players he brought in. It was just releasing players or getting rid of players or loaning out players and not replacing them. That was my only issue. I thought we shouldn't have got rid of Herrera, Lukaku especially. Herrera and Lukaku especially, sorry, and not brought someone in.
Yeah.
So that was one of my criticisms. But in terms of his recruitment, I can't really fault it. I mean, some of them are pretty obvious. I don't think he had to be a genius to spot Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
We say that though, but like you look at who Van Gaal brought in. People like Depay was meant to be one of the best young talents in the world. Schweinsteiger, who's, you know, proven long career World Cup winner. Schneiderlin, again, upcoming player who's been excellent for Southampton.
Yeah,
when we got
Southampton
him.
He was.
Even Luke Shaw, who up until maybe a season ago, you wouldn't have said was a successful signing. They all kind of look like not no-brainers, but. Well, yeah, this makes sense, that makes sense, that makes sense. Most of them aren't here anymore. Like, Daley Blind left, which, rightly or wrongly, I thought it was pretty good, but he knew Daley Blind from the national side. And even when he came into United, he never truly stood out. I think United always seem to make signings that are pretty obvious, but the fact that they don't always work out goes to show that I think sometimes it's more than just, you know, I think there is something to signing the obvious player that actually does still work out, because it's not a dead cert, is it?
No, it's not. And I think the main difference here may be the sort of the manager's input into these transfers. Yeah. I don't think that Louis van Gaal came into United and knew much about Luke Shaw before we signed him.
Probably.
I don't think he knew a lot about Morgan Schneiderlin. I think these were players that our scouting team had looked at and said, you know, we're going to buy them. Let's not forget, we tried to sign in Ander Herrera before Van Gaal came, and we signed him after he came.
Yeah,
so that
true.
Tells you it was a scouting network or someone above Van Gaal or whatever who suggested that or who tried to make that deal happen. But I think the difference here is Ollie's been a bit more hands-on with these transfers. So he wanted a right-back. He was happy with Aaron Wan-Bissaka coming in, and he got him. He wanted Dan James. He knew a little bit about him, and he got him. He wanted Harry Maguire. It wasn't a case of someone saying to Ollie, you're going to get this player. Even if you look at it with Fred and Mourinho. Mourinho didn't want Fred.
No.
You can tell he didn't want him. He's never played him. Yeah. No matter what the situation, you know, 1-0 down against Juve, he's got him on the bench. And what does Jose say after the game? I had no options on the bench. I've just spent 52 million on a midfielder and you won't even give him a cameo.
Yeah.
So the sort of difference for me now is Ole is involved more in the transfers than some of the previous managers. Not, I mean, Mourinho did have a big say in the transfers. I'm not denying that.
Yeah.
But not all of them. And I think sometimes he settled. He's like, I want a midfielder. I can't get the one I want. All right,
we'll take Fred just to stop City.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It was that sort of nonsense.
And he obviously, then again though, he wanted Maguire, didn't he? And he made no secret of that.
There's a conflicting reports. I was speaking to we did an interview a few months ago with Duncan Castles. Now, whether you like Duncan Castles or not, I think we can all agree he does seem to have a sort of...
Him and Mourinho have got a
working relationship with Mourinho.
When you say working relationship, that's bromance.
Yeah, bromance. Yeah. Now, he was adamant that Mourinho hadn't really earmarked Maguire at first.
Right.
And it was sort of when he saw him, it was sort of later in the day that he was happy to have him. But by then the club were like, well, you know, we're going to go
it's
for
too late
Golden or whoever it was. We were trying to get Boateng or whatever. So it was all a bit confusing on that front. But yeah, I mean, Harry Maguire... Towards the end of his time, especially at Leicester, you looked at him, you thought, that is just what United need. I was absolutely convinced we had to get him. I thought he's a really good player, and I think we're beginning to see that as well.
Yeah, I think he's had a bit of criticism. I think most of that is just from... I think the comparisons to Van Dijk were always going to be there because of the price, but Van Dijk came into a more settled side, first of all. Van Dijk, you know, probably, if we're being honest, is a more sort of physically complete player than... He's quicker, he's better on the ball, maybe. Well, but that's the thing. Maguire actually is good on the ball. He's not that quick, but as you know, most of your speed as a footballer comes from your brain, how you read the game, how quick you are to react to things, what position you're in. Because really, all of these players can run 100 metres in 11 and a half seconds. Do you know what I mean? It's, yeah. It's all about how quick your mind is. And Maguire, I can't think of any times or many times this season where someone's just knocked the ball past him and gone past him.
I think the problem with Maguire, I think you're completely right. Defensively, he's been pretty solid. Mm. Made the odd little mistake here and there, but nothing too drastic. But I think a lot of the issues we've had defensively aren't Maguire. I think it's either side of him. I think in midfield, we haven't always had the solid holding midfielders or the solid protection that he's needed at times. Not all the time, but sometimes. And I think from our goalkeeper, De Gea, to me, a lot of the time, he's just nervous. He's nervous coming out of the back. He's nervous commanding his area. He doesn't command his box very well. He's a fantastic shot stopper. I'm not denying that. But when you're watching United at times, you can see there's a lack of communication there, and and it sort of breeds a little bit of nervousness across the back four and across the team. And Maguire tries to do what he's been brought in to do. He tries to carry the ball out, he tries to play it, and sometimes it comes off, sometimes it doesn't. But I think we have been a little bit harsh on him, and I know it's pretty obvious to say, but it's not his fault.
No.
We paid 85 million or whatever it was for him. He can't help that. No. We did overpay for him, I don't think he's worth that. I don't think that's his fault though, but he is a very good defender, and I think we're beginning to see that as well.
I think we overpaid for him in the sense that, like I said, he probably isn't worth that based on his career. But I do think that any club that would have wanted to get him out of Leicester would have had to pay a similar fee. I think he had just got to a point where he was one of the most in-demand centre-backs in the league. I think City, whether they actually went in for him, certainly expressed interest in him. I think, obviously, we knew Mourinho liked him, so wherever he went next, he may well have tried to get him. I think it was always going to cost 60, 70, 80 million to get him out of Leicester. So I think it was an overpay, but I don't necessarily think it was that United tax that you hear about.
No, I think you're right. And this is the weird club, Leicester, in the sense that sort of, ostensibly, they are a selling club. You look at them, you think, you know, Mahrez, Kante, Drinkwater, Maguire, they're a selling club. If we really want Madison, I think we'll get him. But they don't have to sell players. They're not skint. Mm. They've got these owners who have money, who believe in the club as well, and who seem to sort of have bought into it.
Who have won a Premier League.
Premier League, yeah. They're not just
they're all right.
Yeah, they're not just standoffish and not bothered. They seem to sort of really have embraced Leicester.
Yeah.
So they're not a club that if you go to them, oh, we'll give you 40 mil. But okay, then
It's not
like you're dealing with a Norwich.
No.
Someone like that who have to sell or would be forced to because they need the money. They can dig their heels in a little bit and they can say, well, hang on a minute. And also, the other thing with Leicester is they're not that far, we've seen it this season, of challenging at the very top. Mm. So there's that part of it as well where they're thinking, well, hang on a minute, if we keep it, it might be the difference between Champions League or not.
Yeah.
So then you have to make an offer that makes it worth it for them. So it's difficult when you're dealing with a club like Leicester because, as I said earlier, they don't just have to sell. They're not one of these clubs that just has to sell. They will sell players, but if you look at even with Mahrez, that's City's record transfer signing, I think.
Yeah,
it was at the time, anyway.
I think it still is.
Yeah, so they dug their heels in there. They weren't just going to go, well, you can have them for 30 million.
You're going to Leicester and saying, we'll give you 80 million quid to reduce your chance of getting Champions League. Because it's not like I said, if they were finished sort of 10th, if it was sort of West Ham or Bournemouth or Everton, that kind of team, where they're just going to finish somewhere mid-table, probably either way.
Yeah.
They might go, 50 million we'll take.
Yeah.
But they're like, well, we don't need it. And we'll make 50 million by keeping him and getting in the Champions League.
Exactly. So that's why
you've got to pay that extra. Yeah.
I sort of get it. So when I say, you know, he wasn't worth it, I completely agree with you there. I'm not saying that's not a criticism of him. I think it was a little bit inflated and that's what we had to do.
Yeah. So we're talking about, you know, decent transfers and the Solskjaer so far. There's been a story come out today about another potential transfer of Toni Kroos. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Talking that the deal was basically all sorted. Moyes had the deal over the line. He was just going to sign his contract. And then Van Gaal came in and was like, I don't like him.
It's weird, isn't it? Because didn't Moyes say something like this on, didn't he do, what's his name, Richard Keys and Andy Gray's show?
Yeah.
And he said something like that. He said I was going to get Toni Kroos.
Everyone took the piss out of him, didn't they?
I think I was one of them. He was like, yeah, of course you were.
Yeah.
So was I. And it looks like it's true.
Toni Kroos said the contract was there to be signed.
Yeah.
And then Van Gaal came in, he was like, they just stalled a bit. And then Ancelotti gave me a text. And I was like, see you later.
This is the problem we've had at United. Now, I get why David Moyes had to go, and I was a massive advocate of him going. I'm not saying we should have given him more time because the guy was clueless. But we go through this thing of a cycle of managers who want certain players, and even players that are willing to come, and then another manager comes in.
Yeah.
You know, you saw it with Van Gaal when he came in. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Kroos deal goes out the window.
Yeah.
He's not interested. Mourinho comes in, doesn't rate Schweinsteiger at all. Not interested.
Even Pogba, I think, was a Van Gaal signing.
Well, yeah, because it was
Mourinho was so quick to fall out with him. Wasn't
yeah, it? It was a bit weird that one. I don't know what went on there. Well, there was talk that Van Gaal wanted Mane and Kante. Actually, I don't know. Really? I don't know. It's all very mysterious.
Yeah,
but you're right. I mean, there was things went south after that first season. I think they were all right in the first season, but it went south very quickly. But yeah, we go through the cycle. You know, Ole came in. Didn't rate Lukaku. Mm. Now Mourinho pit Lukaku every week. Who's the other player Mourinho always pits? Manu Fellaini.
Yeah.
Ole.
Gone.
Literally gone straight away.
Yeah. I'm not having this.
Mourinho's last major signing. Sanchez. Ole.
First thing out the door. He walked into Carrington and held the door open for Fellaini to go as soon as
he was.
He
already saying it as he was opening the door.
Yeah.
Manu.
Yeah, exactly.
You can go, son. But it's, this is the thing. We go through the cycle. Mm. So someone like Jose or whoever comes in, spends big money or brings in these players or rates these players. I know Fellaini was a Moyes signing, rates these players, and then the new manager comes in and doesn't.
Yeah.
So he has his own sort of ideas. And this is why sometimes, you know, you need to stick a bit.
Yeah, because also if you look at the signings that all of these managers wanted to make, if you kind of follow, maybe Moyes is a bit different because he's not been, we don't really know what his team would have been because he wasn't there long enough. But Van Gaal and then Mourinho, if you kind of follow the trajectory of players and of signings they were wanting to make and the rumours of the players who they were going to sign, each of those squads feels like it could have been a squad that was pushing for big trophies if you gave him a couple more years. Like if you'd have given Mourinho Maguire or that big centre-back or whoever he wanted before he threw all the toys out of the pram, we might well be much closer to, we'd probably still be in Europe. We might well be challenging for, maybe not this season, but a title. You know, it's like we get close to going from being fourth, fifth to pushing on, and then we either change the manager or don't back the manager, and it just drops us back a bit. And here's my question for you, and you're going to like this. Would, if we'd have signed Toni Kroos and the other players that we'd been linked to, would David Moyes still be in the job at United? Would he have just been doing a contract extension on that 7-year contract?
If we'd have signed Messi, Ronaldo, right, Sergio Ramos and Diego Maradona in his prime, David Moyes would not be in a job now.
Okay,
because the man was a buffoon.
I just wanted to get your opinion, that's all. Be sure as well, this is a podcast that's going to be out, just a quick little, we'll let you know, on Spotify, on iTunes and all that. And we're doing a thing as well where if you go and leave us a review on the Stretford Paddock podcast on iTunes, we're going to be giving the best review a Stretford Paddock mug each week, and we'll announce it on House and Brew. We gave one out yesterday, so go onto iTunes and give us a review on there.
Is that the best review or the most honest review?
The funniest one. Someone did a little song about producer Cam on the last one, insulting him. Yeah, it was really good, and he's going to get a mug for it. let's move forward a little bit then and look towards this Bruges game coming up on Thursday. Obviously, 1-1 after the first leg. We spoke before the Watford game and a little bit about that over on Full Time Devils. So if you want to check that out, that's over there. But it's getting towards that, like, 1-1's all right. Now we actually need to win, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And I think we can win. And I think this we were talking earlier on when we started the podcast about the sort of the good feeling we've got, the bit of positivity, you know, a couple of good results in the Premier League, a new signing who's hit the ground running, clean sheets. We're looking all right. And I think if we went out of Europe now to Bruges at home, It'd almost eradicate all that, and everyone would be Ollie out again. Well, not everyone.
Oh, it'd be a nightmare, wouldn't it?
But, you know, the Ollie outers would be out in force, obviously. Yeah. People would be questioning everything about the club, you know, from top to bottom. You wouldn't have that backdoor element of getting into the Champions League that you've got with Europa, that option. You know what?
Don't climbing over the fence when you've been kicked out of the party. That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that element's gone.
Yeah, that's gone. So it just deflates you.
Yeah.
So I think we need to win this. I don't think there's any excuses. I mean, if you look at the way we played against Bruges for the last 15 or 20 minutes, whenever it was when Fred and Fernandes came on, we were a different team. And I think if we play our strongest team against Bruges, we can win it and we should win it.
I think it will be the strongest team as well. You're talking there about like the sort of better feeling. Me asking questions like, would Moyes still be in the job at United? I don't feel like I could have asked that even as a joke, which it was 2 weeks ago or a month ago. But yeah, those clean sheets, just a little stat here. United have kept the second most clean sheets in Europe this season. 17 clean sheets. How is that possible?
I feel like I missed those 17 games. It just feels like I'm gone.
5 in the Europa League. I think it's also 10 or 11 in the Premier League now, or 9 in the Premier League. 7 of which have come in the last sort of
I wonder, you know.
Six weeks. And then another three in the domestic competitions.
I mean, we know Sergio Romero, by and large, I know he didn't improve, is a clean sheet machine.
Yeah.
But I think David De Gea is getting back towards his best, because he went off the boil.
We've not seen a mistake since the Norwich game.
No, and he was going back end of last season, being this season, he just wasn't himself at all. And I was really worried, but he seems to be a little bit better, a bit more like his old self. Not quite to the standards that he set earlier on, or for the first four or five seasons, but he's getting there. We mentioned there about Maguire, he's growing into the role as captain as well. Aaron Wan-Bissaka defensively, you're never going to get a problem.
Matic back in the squad as well?
Yeah, well said, definitely. He gives you that little bit of extra protection, because Fred, I always feel like, is a player who isn't naturally a holding midfielder. Yeah. He's just playing there because that's where we need him.
He's got a lot of energy and he's industrious, isn't he?
In his head, he thinks he's an attacking midfielder, and I don't know why, because his shooting is the one thing that lets him down.
It is comically bad.
It's
as bad as mine. It's amateur. You see,
against Watford, where it was like on a plate, not on a plate, but it was like an easy shot.
Get it on target.
Yeah, and you're like, and it went wide, and you're like, oh, come on.
Every shot goes wide.
And yes, Chadwick's taking a free kick in the last minute.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Taking off Mata as well. He's literally scored some of the most since he came in the league.
Other than Beckham, I think Mata has the best sort of goal scoring record in the Premier League with free kicks.
Ridiculous.
And you're going, no, I'm having this. And it's like, what is going on? Like, so Fred isn't an attacking midfielder, but he's sort of, my point is, yeah, he's sort of plays in that role in front of the defence a lot of the time. It does a good job, I'm not knocking Fred, but Matic, that is him, innit? That's what he's about. And he's come back into the team, and he's been like the Nemanja Matic of old. He's been like the Nemanja Matic we bought from Chelsea for those first few months.
He's a bit slow sometimes, isn't he? And sometimes he don't bring the ball out as much as he used to, because I think he don't trust his legs to get back. But his positioning is clearly the best of any of our defensive midfielders. His reading of the game from a defensive perspective is clearly the best out of any of our defensive midfielders. And he can actually pass it, which is something that, you know, he can get the ball in the channels, and he can get it to Fernandes. And just having Fernandes in there has been such a big boost. I think it offers, it makes the opposition think, well, we probably should leave one man back, because if they counter-attack in, they've got this lad who can actually pick a ball out. And I think it's just something for them to worry about extra, isn't it? But are you expecting that first choice, Matic, Fred, Fernandes, that kind of first team against Bruges?
Yeah, definitely. I can't remember. I think I might have picked maybe even McTominay in my predicted 11 we did on full-time doubles in my preview. But a strong midfield anyway. Yeah. The one definite is Fernandes. He makes us tick already, and I'm not embarrassed to say that. He does, and I think he has to be in the team. I don't mind whether it's Matic and Fred, or Matic and McTominay, or McTominay and Fred. I'd rather see Fred start, to be honest with you, because he's played a lot of football, and he's played well rather than not. But I think maybe you could argue Fred, Bruno, and another, be that Matic and McTominay. I think that works.
Yeah.
And I think with that midfield and our normal defence, whether that's back five or back four, I'd feel pretty confident.
Yeah, and I think it was a good time for Greenwood to score as well, because he just seemed to hit a little bit of a bumpy patch, didn't he? A couple of performances where he wasn't quite as good, ain't got a goal for a bit, but a lovely finish against Watford the other day, and I reckon he'll start as well. I think we might almost see an unchanged side. Maybe if McTominay's fit to start, or we might see, like I said, Fred coming out or something like that. But I think it's going to be pretty much first choice. It's got to be, ain't it? Like I said, this game now, 1-1's a decent result, but if it's a 1-1 and then you go out, then it don't matter what the first result was.
Do you remember under Jose Sevilla? I know you did remember it, obviously. But I think that was like a seminal game now. I don't think he ever recovered from that.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think had we gone through to the last 16, whatever it was, in the Champions League, I think he would have been like, that would have taken us through the quarters. I can't remember anyway.
Yeah.
But had we gone through, there would have been a bit of positivity, people believe it. But there was no excuses for that.
No.
And that seemed to sum up a lot. Pogba was unhappy. He was unhappy with Pogba. He came out with some silly statements after the game about, oh, we're never going to win it anyway.
Yeah.
And a lot of the journalists turned on him.
Just a bit mardy, that.
Yeah, and there was no excuses. And the people were going, you know, we basically threw that game away by going to Seville, getting a 0-0, and then taking it for granted we were going to beat them, and leaving Pogba on the bench and things like that.
Yeah.
And he never quite recovered. And I think this, I don't want to sound melodramatic, but you have games where you look back and think, that is a turning point. And I think for Ole, if we were to go out of Bruges, he could start losing some of that support that he's got from the sort of hardcore match-going fans who, by and large, not all, but by and large, believe in what he's doing and stick with him. You can start to lose a bit of that when you feel deflated, like I said earlier, and you go out of competitions that you shouldn't have gone out of. Yeah. It's one thing losing at home to, say, Crystal Palace in fucking September or whenever it was.
Yeah.
But to get knocked out of a competition that could lead to Champions League football against Bruges when you've level pegging after the first leg away.
And it was a heavily rotated squad in the first leg as well. It wasn't like we went there, sorry, and we were stunned by how good Bruges were. We had a poor team that didn't play particularly well, and Bruges looked all right, but never, you know, they didn't look great.
I just wonder with that game as well, whether that was, talking about seminal games and sort of games that a pivotal, whether that was the game for Ole with Pereira and Lingard.
That sort of,
because he dropped them from the squad. I mean, okay, you can see, but I wonder whether he looked at him and thought, these two are going to cost me my job.
Yeah, and it was basically almost word for word saying, these lads are a bit crap here. Like he said, if they want to play, there's a level that and they need to improve. Well, like, it's that's interesting, the first time we've seen him say that.
Because you saw it at the Etihad, where he said to Lingard, didn't he, one more of them,
and you're off. Yeah.
And everyone made like a meme out of it. It was like, oh, it's amazing. But so he's obviously knows all he's done. He's not that stupid that he can't see what's going on. And he must know that he's under a lot of pressure. And they've just not performed. And I get it. I understand giving Lingard a chance. And people say, why? But I understood it because he'd had sort of good games against Arsenal. You think bring him in against Arsenal. He had a good game at the Etihad early in the season.
He's proven in his career that he can be a decent
so, you know, and he's
player.
Still only 27 or whatever he is. So you think, and then with Pereira, again, sometimes there's glimpses and he flats the deceive a little bit. But there's no excuse now. I think we know it's not happening for him. And it pains me to say it because I've always been a big Jesse Lingard fan. But we cannot afford passengers in this team. We can't even afford passengers against the likes of Bruges, no disrespect to them.
Well, we saw
even
it.
Rochdale, we did it, didn't we? Yeah. I was saying it on the preview earlier. You know, we rested players against Rochdale. We took us to 90 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
So Ole's got to realise, listen, this is sort of do or die now. I have to have my strongest available team. And, you know, you can't take anything for granted. And we saw that in the first leg.
Yeah, I think what he's doing slowly, and like you said, it was a bit of a meme, that City, you know, where he was screaming at Lingard. But what he's slowly doing is, One of the doubts over Ole, one of the things people used to say about him was he hasn't improved players. I think you see that a lot less now because he's clearly improved Rashford, he's clearly improved Fred. Martial's on for the best season he's ever had at United.
Yeah.
Dan James, whilst he didn't necessarily improve him, turned out to be a bit of a shrewd signing.
Yeah.
He's improved Matic again, he's improved McTominay. Like the idea that Solskjaer hasn't improved anyone doesn't hold as much water as it did. This idea that he's a soft touch is now being addressed. Oh, he just wants to be the friends of the players. He's just this happy, smiley guy. Well, we saw against City that he's willing to do it publicly and scream at people. And then, again, just to reiterate it, you're not even in the squad, and I'll say to the press, it's because they're not good enough.
Yeah.
That's slowly dispelling another one of these kind of negative sides of, oh, you know, he's just here because he's so happy to be a United manager that he's not willing to have a go at the team. And we're seeing now that that's not true.
Well, yeah, I mean, as anyone knows, you go to Norway. If you survive a Norwegian winter, you're not exactly a shrinking violet. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And he always had a bit about him, didn't he, Ole?
Yeah.
He had this sort of old baby face. But do you know what I mean? Remember the Newcastle game where he took out, was it Robert Lee last minute when he was going through on goal, he got the red card. He wasn't soft, Ole.
No.
He was a tough character. I think he was just because he's like, you know, was dead happy that people think, oh, he's...
Yeah, and he's baby face and all that. He makes people think he's a bit of a kid.
We saw it last season against Everton, after the 4-0 loss, where he was like, some of them won't be here next season.
Yes.
You could see he was angry and he was fed up and he realised that, listen, some of them aren't up for this and they're going to cost me my job. And I think it's the same thing now where he's given people a chance. One thing you can't criticise Ole for is not giving players a chance. He's given Lingard a chance. He's given Pereira a chance.
Yeah.
He's even given Matic a chance, which has worked out.
He's had to give people a chance.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
So, you know, again, it's not always his fault that they were playing him. Like I said, you can see now that he didn't want to play him. But yeah, he's given people a chance.
He has, and some of them have stepped up to it. Matic has stepped up to it and showed that he's still got legs left in him, still got a season left in him.
Mm-hmm.
Others, like Pereira, it's a bit soon to say this because Delors was only had one bad game, but he's another one that sort of needs to take his chances a bit better when he is given an opportunity in a team. He needs to take that chance better. So Ole does like to give everyone a go, and part of that is because, as I said earlier, you let a lot of players go without replacing him. But some of them now, it's almost past the point of no return, and we can't afford to go into the business end of the season having players that are giving you 3 out of 10s.
Do you think that maybe Lingard and Pereira, or one of those two, I would guess it would be Lingard just because of his history at the club and the fact that, like I said, we have actually seen him be a decent midfielder in his time. Might get another season just because we don't have enough players. Like, if we get rid of two more midfielders, that's another two on top of the probably two we already need. Like, do you think they'll be just as rotation players?
I'm just wondering how many or who's coming sort of from the youth. I'm wondering how far Garner is away. I'm wondering how far Dylan Levitt is away.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering whether Ollie thinks, you know, Pereira and Lingard go. I know they're different types of player than Levitt and Garner, but if those two are closer to the first team, they can maybe do a dozen games each next season. Yeah. I bring in another midfielder or two, then we're all right.
We might be okay.
Yeah, so I'm wondering whether that's his thinking, because this season, Levitt and Garner have been only used sparingly. I think they've got like three or four games between.
Not many.
I think next season I expect them not to play every game or to be first teamers, but to feature a lot more in the cups and maybe even in the league against... I know we struggle, but in the more winnable game, should we say. So I'm wondering that's behind his thinking, because I, in answer to your question, I just think
they're gone.
I think they're gone, mate. And I've said this many a time, I'll continue to say it. I like Andres Pereira. I do, oddly, I think he's, you know, he has some glimpses. And there's times when I've really sort of believed
him. I feel a bit sorry for him as well, because he tries so hard. And those quotes of like the ketchup bottle and all that, you just think, I want this to work because he seems like a nice guy, and it's a bit kind of sad.
It is a bit sad, but...
Yeah, you can't be like that, can you?
I can't remember, and I've said this before, a player who's had so many bad games for United repeatedly getting a chance. There have been worse players at the club than Andres Pereira, don't get me wrong, but they haven't played 30 games by February or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They've not got anywhere near that. Do you know what I mean? And yet he's had so many games this season where he's just been so poor. And it's not even like he's been a 6 out of 10 or a 5 out of 10.
No,
he's been like,
he's talking like,
he's just constantly giving the ball away. It's painful to watch.
And like you said, against Bruges, you almost imagine Solskjaer was in there either saying or thinking, if they can't do it against these lot, what are they?
And you just look at it, and Ollie as well, he's given him a start. Now, in the past, he'd have looked on his bench, and who did he have had? A month ago, who would he have had on the bench if he'd have started Pereira and Lingard?
No one. Yeah.
So what are you doing? Nothing. Yeah. What can you do?
Yeah, just have to play it.
Yeah. Right? Whereas now, you've got absolute quality there. Mm. Well, you could have been, but Fred or whatever. But you've got a player who can create chances, who can make things happen.
Yeah, and you've got McTominay coming back as well.
Yeah. So you've got options. And also, when Fernandes is starting alongside these players, we saw it in his debut against Wolves, he's embarrassing him.
Yeah.
He's showing him up.
Yeah, and he's not someone like Mata, who sometimes you bring him on and you think, you start a game and you think, oh, you know, he's still got a bit of quality here, but he's not. Fernandes, literally, like I said, makes people look almost worse because of how good he is.
And it's even the same, you know, when it's another mean sort of situation featuring Lingard, but when he was saying to him, you know, make the run across, and Lingard stood next to Anawan-Bissaka or whatever.
Yeah. Like getting the space, I'll pass the ball to you.
Jesse Lingard's played 200 games for Manchester United.
He's not a kid.
Former England international who went to a World Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a 17-year-old making his debut. It's basic, but I don't know if that's confidence or whatever with Lingard. He's just so bereft of it, he doesn't know what to do anymore. But Fernandes is literally saying, just make that run across, I'll play it into you. And he isn't. So Ollie's got to be seeing that. We're all seeing it. Ollie's got to be seeing that and saying, bloody hell, this isn't happening for these players. I've got someone who can make this team tick. I need to surround him with other players that are going to benefit him, not hinder him.
We're talking about Pereira and Lingard potentially leaving. Obviously, you have to look forward in that case to who's going to replace him. There's been talk from Duncan Castles, who we were talking about before, about Chelsea and Liverpool maybe either struggling to kind of match Dortmund's estimations or Sancho's estimations for that transfer, and potentially that's leaving United as maybe the only option. And also Jack Grealish is another one who's been repeatedly linked, the MEN, the Athletic, pretty much everyone. It's a very open secret that United are after Grealish. What do you think the chance of those transfers happening are, and do you think there would be good transfers for United?
I think the chances of either of those transfers happening is quite good, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I know Steve has obviously spoken about Sancho quite a lot and said that United and I think someone else, I don't know if he's named a club or said someone else, are the two that are in the running, and the interest is real, and the sort of the willingness of Sancho to give us a go is real. It's just whether it's us or someone else. So I don't think that's much of a secret. We definitely could use him. I think any team could use him in the world, honestly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you could argue maybe
he wouldn't get in.
He might not get into the Scousers if Salah stays
so
there.
Sad, but
it's true. Yeah. I'm not going to sit here
it's
and
so
just
settled.
Say,
it's,
would you drop Mo Salah for him? Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah. Or Sadio Mane, for that matter, if you wanted to play him on the other side. No. But I think any other team in the world, he probably does. I think even City,
He gets in the Barcelona team. I think he gets in the Juve team.
I don't think this season is particularly strong. for teams anyway.
No, there seems to be a dip, doesn't there? Yeah. Like, the biggest... I was looking at this bit the other day, and the biggest and most acclaimed strikers in the world are all over 30. So Lewandowski, Aguero, Suarez, the only ones that are sort of coming up...
Is Aubameyang over 30?
Aubameyang, I think, is either 29 or 30. He's close, you know, he's just touching 30. Ronaldo, obviously, well over 30. Messi, over 30. Benzema, over 30. All these players that we've seen come through over the last 10 years that have been world-class since they were sort of early 20s are all pushing on, and they haven't really been replaced. We've got Mbappe, who obviously is incredible, but he's playing for a team that wins the league every season. We've got Haaland, who maybe is the next one to truly replace one of these. Like, but generally, there is a kind of a cavern of... I don't know. I just think there aren't many top-class strikers in Europe.
It's like the whole golden generation thing, isn't it? Where you say there's a crop of players that come through. You know, when you had like a situation where you had like Ronaldo and Messi, and then almost slightly behind them, you had like Zlatan and players like that.
Suarez,
Eto'o, whatever. You're like, wow, this is like, you know, there's sort of an embarrassment of riches, as they say, in terms of quality around the world. I don't know if there is all that sort of that level of it, or that number, as you say. There are one or two, like Mbappe and Haaland, for example, who stand out. But yeah, I think that's a pretty good point. And I think Sancho, going back to the original point, is one of those players that you look at and think has the potential to get there. I don't think he's there quite yet. No. There's question marks, because I'm always sceptical of players that have only done it for a couple of years in Germany. Yeah. I think there is that great unknown. That's no disrespect to the German league, but we've seen it before. Mkhitaryan was amazing for Dortmund. Mm-hmm. Kagawa was amazing for Dortmund. They weren't poor for United, but they weren't great.
But even look at other players like Nuri Sahin, who was, I think, captain at Dortmund, came to Liverpool, barely got a game.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a decent sample size there to get from.
You would expect a player of Sancho's quality at his age, who's been in England before, obviously, and who sort of isn't coming to a foreign country with no knowledge of it and, you know, doesn't speak the lingo and is going to feel unsettled. Mm. That's a massive help for him. I would expect him to reach the heights that are being predicted. So, yeah, I'd love to see him. And the other player you mentioned there, Jack Grealish. You know, I've got to be honest, I wasn't a mad fan of his. I wasn't that keen on him. Mm. I thought he was a little bit overrated. I thought he was a bit of a sort of, he got a lot of credit because he rolls his socks down.
And he's got a cool haircut.
And he'll do a bit of a, exactly. He'll do the odd bit of skill now and again. Everyone raves about him because he's playing alongside Dross. But my opinion completely changed when he came to Old Trafford, because I saw that guy get kicked all over the pitch and just keep getting up, keep causing problems, scored a great goal.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? He's got a bit about him. It's not just hype.
Yeah,
it's not, because I think I was harsh on him as well, because he'd been overhyped by like Tim Sherwood or someone when he was at Villa. I think they get to the cup final against, was it City they played in the cup final? I can't remember what it was. It might have been, I can't remember. Played someone in the FA Cup final, they got absolutely dicked. And he went missing. And I was thinking, oh, he's overrated, and he had that record in his 20 losses in the Premier League.
Yeah, the longest ever start without a win in the Premier League.
But that wasn't his fault. And I think you've seen it this season, what he's capable of. Still relatively young, mid-20s, early 20s. So
yeah, he's 23, 24.
Yeah, something like that. Can play in a number of positions as well, can't he? So I think we can get him both. I think we can. I think we should. I think we need options, man, not just one player who, you know, oh, we'll get Sancho and then that's it. And then you're linking all the Pogba goes. Are we really any better
Pogba goes and Fernandes gets injured.
Yeah, then we're back to square one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's back to old Pereira, come back, we need you.
We need another midfielder, and whether that's Grealish or whoever, and we do need, I think, Sancho. Again, like, not only is Sancho the best option, when you actually look, same point I just made really, but look around Europe, he's basically the only option. The only other one with relatively similar sort of potency in front of goal and in terms of assist is Mbappe, and he's 200 million.
Yeah, he won't come to United.
No,
Mbappe.
Top, you know, stars at the moment. Haaland's just been transferred, like I said about Mbappe, and Sancho seems to be one of the few that, you know, there's been this kind of layer of players that look like they might do it, the likes of sort of Kingsley Coman, and we even saw Dembele move to Barcelona and not quite do it, but no one else in the last few years has really sort of taken that step forward. And I think it's almost like Sancho or nothing in that position, because I can't even think of an alternative, really.
No, I mean, I think if you, which, like you say, worrying, if you weren't going to buy Sancho, I think you'd probably go, right, Greenwood, you know, you're getting a chance. And I don't want to hear this nonsense battle. If you buy Sancho, it's going to stifle Greenwood. Nothing is going to stifle Mason Greenwood, right? You could go out and you could buy Sancho and Haaland, and you still won't stifle Mason Greenwood, because he's that good. He can play across the front. Mm. He's only young. He's only 18. He's not even been 18 for that long. He's going to have a bright future at Manchester United, make no mistake about it. And players of that quality they get games.
Yeah.
They force their way into the equation. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Steele always mentions Marcus Rashford having all those players ahead of him after his debut when the players came back from injury and things like that, and he's still going to the team. Ole, you know, you call him super sub. He started a lot of games, Ole. He played a lot of games. He played in different positions.
The other day, Solskjaer got a goal or assist every 130 minutes for United.
It's ridiculous, that.
Which is insane.
That's insane numbers.
Yeah, absolutely insane. To say he's coming on in games late on, he hasn't got the feel for the game. I know he started a lot of games, like you said, but people underestimate how many games he did start. But a lot of them were as subs, and he was such a brilliant player. But yeah, like Greenwood, I think, even if it's Martial, like, I think the chances of Mason taking Martial's spot, aren't particularly small over the next 3 or 4 years. You look at the way Rashford's come in.
I just wonder with Martial whether, long term, he's going to be at United for the rest of his life.
No,
is he going to? You know, and that's not before Martial. Obviously, get on my case. You know, he's bashing him. Not a criticism of a player that came from Monaco, who is French, who may one day want to go to a different club, who may one day say, "Do you know what? I wouldn't mind spending a couple of seasons in La Liga or going back to France, whatever. That's okay."
And also, people forget, if he does really well for United, let's say he ends up with 25 goals in all competitions this season and does the same thing next season, we might have to sell him. It's not a guarantee that it's, we don't like him anymore. That might happen because obviously there are some downsides to him. But like I said, he might want to go to La Liga. He might want to go back to France at some point. So he signed a new deal
as well, didn't he, under Jose?
Yeah.
Which put him on decent money. He's on decent money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you wonder whether there's a clause in it, a buyout clause or whatever.
Most
players do have any, you know, he can't have escaped noticing that United has exactly been flying. He's barely played in the Champions League, which for a player of his quality is an absolute disgrace. So, yeah, I could see him end up leaving. And if that was the case, then, you know, if say Martial leaves in 3 seasons or 2 seasons, Mason Green will be 21.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's not like he's missed his chance.
And Rashford has just really sort of stepped up to looking like he's sort of edging on that kind of superstar level of this season, where you think, oh, actually, he can win us games by himself now. And that's when he's 22. He's been in the squad for 4 years.
That's what I mean. Sometimes it
takes a bit longer than you think. And if he's that good, by the time he's 22, he'll be starting for us regardless of
who's
in
front of him. I'm so excited, to see Mason Greenwood in a few years' time. I just hope it's not going to be a Rashford scenario when you've got a player who's firing and alongside players that aren't doing it. And I'm hoping we've got a team that's sort of worthy of him.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because potentially there you could have with Rashford, with Martial, with Mason, and if we brought in someone like Sancho, that's mouthwatering.
We're gonna have a look in the comments now for a little bit before we go. If you've got any questions for Jay, let us know in the comments. Someone here asking, saying it's weird hearing them say Mason's only 18. How old are Haaland and Sancho, and look at what they're doing? What do you say to that?
It's a good point. I think starters with Haaland, you'd never see that. He's a once-in-a-generation sight. Yeah. That for a 17-year-old to come in and just bang in so many goals at the top level, at Champions League level as well, is unheard of. Yeah. Look at Mason. Look at his career trajectory. The guy banged in a goal a game, I think, in the academy.
Yeah, 40 and 40.
Yeah, so... And you look at what he's done as a first-team player. 5 Premier League goals, double figures already. You know, you can't fault him.
No.
Yes, Sancho and Haaland have done well, but what they've done is they've gone to Germany to do it.
Yeah.
Sancho was at City, he didn't stick around, did he?
No.
He went to Germany.
Haaland was at the best team in Austria, scored loads of goals, and now he's at the most sort of creative and attacking side in Germany. Do you think if Greenwood was at Dortmund, he wouldn't have got maybe 15, 20 goals?
If Greenwood went to Dortmund at the beginning of the season, he'd be on 20 goals this season.
Yeah.
He would.
Easily.
But he's staying at United, I'm glad he is, and I think that there's no criticism of Greenwood he's not sort of hitting the numbers that those guys are getting, but I think he can potentially be just as good, if not better than him.
Mm. Someone here saying, United made the right decision selling Herrera. He's played 8 games this season and has been injured on $300,000 a week. What do you say to that?
I think...
I like ending everything with what do you say to that. Like, I'm really sort of picking your brain.
This is like Paxman.
What do you say to that,
get
then?
Get them spotlights on me. Where were you on the
How
night?
How dare you say that about Ander Herrera?
Listen, I'm not going to pretend. There's no point because there's video evidence of it. I was a massive Ander Herrera fan.
Mm-hmm.
I was gutted when he left. I thought he should have stayed. I thought the club should have done what we could to get him. I think that I got it, though, that $300,000 was excessive. I think from what I heard, again, I don't want to keep referring to it, but we did speak about it when I spoke to Duncastle. He said that Ole made it clear he wanted to keep Herrera, and the club had sort of stalled on offering him a deal. And by the time they said, okay, we'll get him for you, he'd already made this sort of deal with Paris Saint-Germain. That the
we wouldn't necessarily have been paying him that much money if we'd have tried to extend his contract 2 years ago.
No.
It probably would have been 150, 200.
And Herrera was, I think, was like, is he 28, 29? So it's his last big deal. He took it. It's not worked out for him. I think if he'd have stayed, he would have played a lot of games. I think Andres Pereira would have played a lot fewer. And Herrera would have played. And I think it's a bit sad because I think he's obviously, he'll probably be disappointed that he's not getting a game and we could have used him.
Mm. Someone here saying, how many players do you think we need to become a consistent top four side?
I don't think we're as far off as many people expect.
Yeah.
I think if you look at it, you know, you mentioned there Grealish and Sancho. Right, that's two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, maybe you bring in another midfielder, or maybe, well, no, you bring in Grealish, you bring in Sancho.
That team's surely better than Chelsea.
Yeah. Maybe you look at it and you think, all right, we need another option in defence. But don't forget the youngsters we've got coming through. Aaron Wan-Bissaka's now with Ethan Laird, who's got a backup. Luke Shaw, Brandon Williams are vying for that spot.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Bailly, I know we keep saying this every season, but. If we can get fit, Axel Tuanzebe, yeah, if exactly, we can get the fit, there's options there. So don't think we're as far away, especially not for the top four, as we think. I did a tweet a few months ago where I said, you know, if we got one or two signings, we could be where we need to be. And people misconstrued that as like, if we get one or two signings, we're going to win the league. No, yeah. I thought we were sort of two signings away from getting into top four, and I stand by that. And I think that's probably, you know, where we're at now.
Yeah.
So I think if we brought in two or three players, top four for me would be expected.
Someone is saying, do you think another manager could have done much better than Ole has with the squad he's had?
No.
No.
I'll be honest with you, right? And I'm not just saying this because I'm here in Steve's studio and Steve's like Mr.
Anti-Poch.
Anti-Poch. But I get a lot of what's, not all of it, but I agree with a lot of what Steve's saying. And I think that the thing with Ole is, the thing that's let him down is just the easier games where he's been overconfident with players that aren't up to the job, or he's just made one change too many, or he's not been able to adapt. His in-game management hasn't been good enough. Mm. But in the big games, he's shown that he is capable of getting a tune out of this team. And I think, yeah, you could argue that maybe Ancelotti, for example, if he'd have come into United at the beginning of the season, would we have more points than we've got now? Maybe we could have. So that might contradict what I say slightly. Maybe we could have. But I don't think there'd be massive differences. And
no.
I think that Ole, I can see what he's trying to do. And you can argue that another manager wouldn't have given Williams a chance, wouldn't have trusted Greenwood as much as he has done, wouldn't have, you know, had this focus on the academy as well that's convincing players like Ethan Laird to stick around. So I like what Ole's doing. He's not perfect. And I think Jory's still out. I've said that many times. I think that, you know, at the end of the season, we'll take stock. And if we haven't got Champions League and we haven't won a trophy, he's going to be in serious trouble. But I think we need to get behind him. And I think there's a reason we need to get behind him. It's not just because of blind loyalty to a guy that scored a goal 20 odd years ago. It's because I think he's doing a decent job.
Right, I think that's a great way to end it. Thanks very much for joining me, Jay. Like I said before, this podcast will be up in audio form on iTunes, on Spotify, and anywhere else where you get your podcasts. So if you go into the Stretford Paddock podcast on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review and leave a little comment with your Instagram or Twitter handle in there. And if whatever the best one of the week is, if you make us laugh, probably that's the best way of doing it. We'll give you a Stretford Paddock mug. So be sure to do that. Thanks very much for joining us, Jay.
It's been all right, this.
It's been good, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Cheers for joining us at home as well. We'll be back tomorrow for the preview for the game against Bruges, and we're back of course against Bruges for build-up, preview, team news, review, all that good stuff that we always do. So we'll see you in a bit.